What is up, everybody, and welcome back to Laying the Points with Farley Betts. We are back after 2 weeks off. The holidays, July 4th, took an extra week as we were sifting through Wimbledon. Man, Wimbledon was a tough grind for yours truly, that's for sure. We actually had a pretty big play on over 3.5 sets in that men's final, Djokovic and Alcaraz on Sunday. So that was a killer loss. But you know what? You got to take the good with the bad. That's why you have good bankroll management. What's up, everybody? My name is Chris R. Farley, professional handicapper now for 4 years and running. You might have seen me on VSiN. You might have seen me on the BetUS NBA or NFL shows of the past. You might know me from the 33rd team as head of betting and betting content over there. Now you can catch me at sportswagers.live or sportswagers.ca for our daily plays over there. At SW, obviously on Twitter as Farley Betts. You can check me out on Instagram too for a little more personalized version of Farley Betts. But all my main betting content is on Twitter. And right now, our main sport that we're betting is the WNBA. We're 33-15. That's a 69% hit rate. And I know, 69 is a pretty cool number, but if you know 69% against the spread is pretty damn good. It's pretty damn unheard of. I mean, if we had over 100, over 200 picks in the WNBA, I'm sure it wouldn't be that high. But that's the thing. I think we're doing a very good job of being judicious with our play selections this summer in the WNBA because we're mostly prepping for the NFL. And I told you guys we're going to have some fantastic guests on Laying the Point leading into the NFL season. And that starts today. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on our first guest this summer on Laying the Points. And I've talked about this guy before. He's been on the podcast before, and I know I've talked about him a lot on Twitter because he deserves it. Welcome, everybody. Patrick Gates at Gator Betting on Twitter. Patrick, I'm going to blow you up here a little bit because you really do deserve it. I don't know if there's anybody in the sports betting industry, and I'm including myself in that. And I think at Sports Wagers, we have some of the best writers in the betting industry for sure. But as far as your preparation goes, Patrick, like this might be my first question for you is like, how long does that shit take you? Because Patrick Gates, he's a writer over there at the Odds Breakers. He's been on the Twitter scene for at least a few years now, putting his plays and putting his opinions out there. He's had his own podcast as well. You could talk about that if you'd like, Patrick. But welcome, everybody. Patrick Gates, expert golf, NHL, and horse racing bettor. And Patrick, your articles are just so like long and detailed. How long do those take you? And I mean, how often are you doing articles like that?
Yeah, Chris. Well, first off, thanks for having me. And it all depends too. So obviously the golf, I think, take up the majority of the time. Those are probably a few hours a week. The horse racing's once a week, usually on Saturday. So that's probably another few hours. NHL is a little bit shorter, maybe an hour or two every day, depending on kind of how many plays I have, but that's kind of the schedule. Thank God now I kind of have a format that I can just transfer over pretty much from each article, right, whether it be golf or horse racing. So that's cut down on the time a little bit as well. But yeah, it's certainly a grind of trying to manage the day job and the night job per se of the sports gambling career. So, but it's something I really enjoy, which I think is kind of what has driven me so far to kind of put this extra preparation in. So I love it. And despite the amount of time that it takes, it's always an enjoyment.
Yeah, well, you can tell the passion is there. I mean, you can't put that much time, that much detail into something if it's not there. And, you know, a writer at the Odds Breakers, right? That's where I was starting out too back in, I think I started writing for the Odds Breakers in 2020. Love Kiev over there, still try to promote you guys as much as I can. I might get involved with the Odds Breakers again too. Who knows? You know, we all kind of cross paths and try to stay in touch. But I always tell the story because I remember finding you seeing you on Instagram at a certain point, and you're like, even like the font, the color scheme, everything about it was like so buttoned up. I was like, oh man, Kiev, like the Odds Breakers have to know about this guy. They have to, because you just know that you're going to bring it. And I know you're going to bring it on this show too. First thing I want to ask you about and talk about is horse racing, because I know you have a long history with that, both personally and in the way that you bet. And just for someone like me, right? Like I love to bet the Triple Crown. I mean, who doesn't, right? Who doesn't like a shot at a trifecta, superfecta to win 100,000 that day or whatever? Pick a few winners here and there, but I really like race to race. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I don't really know how to like necessarily approach horse racing, like from the start, right? Like those weekly, the parimutuel bets and everything that goes into that. So where would somebody like the basic guy or gal who wants to get started in horse racing, which by the way, is kind of the OG of all sports betting, right? Like maybe they were betting in the Colosseum in Rome back in the day. I don't know.
Something, but
like
sports
betting, you know, that started with horse racing, right? Like that's kind of where it all began. So I know horse racing is a little bit different because those odds can change up until post time, right? And then, you know, so there are fixed odds and maybe you can get into that. But where would somebody who's a really true green rookie start when it comes to betting horse racing?
Yeah, I mean, before I get into that, I do want to give you a shout out because you did find me on Instagram. I was trying to think of the date when that was. I think it was probably what, pre-COVID, so maybe 2019, 2020?
It was, I think it was 2020 because I think I started at Odds Breakers in early 2020, right before COVID.
All right.
And then COVID hit, so I just had a lot more time on my hands, you know, working from home. So we were trying to build the Odds Breakers a little more, so around that time frame, you popped up,
But getting back to your question, so in terms of getting started with horse racing, I mean, with most industries too, it's kind of tough in terms of you have your OGs per se in the industry and then trying to reach out to them and just trying to get kind of pick their minds in terms of a strategy. It's a little bit more difficult because horse racing, everyone has a different strategy, right? There's no set in stone scientific method that people are looking at and saying, oh, look, the one's clearly going to win this race. I mean, if it was, it wouldn't be gambling, right? And you have to keep in mind, we're betting on animals here that are in a field with other animals and there's jockeys riding them. So there's a million different factors that go into each race. And while your process may be solid, you can break down the race from start to finish. Unexpected things do happen. Horses get bumped out of the gate. Horses get ejected. So there's a number of different kind of unforeseen factors that you also, there's a bit of luck involved in it as well. So that's kind of what I would say. But when you're buying a racing program, or you're going to Saratoga, you're going to Aqueduct, you're going to Del Mar, one of the tracks on the West Coast, there's a page in the beginning of the book of the past performances that kind of is a legend that allows the user to kind of understand what each metric listed on the page is. So it almost start with that in terms of if you're going, take a minute, look at that chart at the beginning to just get your grasp in terms of trying to understand the basics of what the past performances program is listing. Take it home with you. There's charts obviously online that kind of replicate that. So that's where I would start first of all, is just trying to understand what specifically the program is listing in terms of each different metric for the horse based on their past performances. I would also, I mean, so once you kind of get a grasp in terms of what the program is saying, from there, I would start to go just learning each types of bets, because it's not straightforward as your other sports, hockey, football, basketball, your money lines, your spreads, your over-unders, your totals. So in terms of horse racing, there's several different types of bets. You have your standard win, play, show, and then you go into your exotics, your exactas, your trifectas, superfectas, pick three through fives, and then even your daily doubles. So there's a numerous, like there's several different types of bets that you can really approach each race with. So that's kind of another thing, is understanding each type of bet and then trying to understand the past performances of what they're saying. From there, it is more difficult, because when you place a bet in football, say, you know kind of your risk and your payout on that bet. In horse racing, the odds are live. So you really don't know what a horse is going to close at in terms of the odds before the race begins. So trying to understand payouts, whether it be a win bet, an exacta, or kind of however you're approaching this race, of just trying to get a grasp and manage your bankroll responsibly so that you're not kind of going all in on, say, two favorites, where if either horse wins, you're still going to lose some money just because the payout's not going to be as advantageous. And then kind of from there, I guess, understanding the pools as well when you're looking at your payouts. Obviously, your graded stakes races, your triple crowns are going to have a larger pool, so the payout's going to be increased. But if you're just betting on a random sixth race at Presque Isle, Isles Down on a Tuesday afternoon, the payout's not going to be as kind of big as the same odds would be at Saratoga on the weekend. So,
and that's, and that's because it has to, like, it's based on who's putting in the bets, right? Like how much money is in the
pool. Yep. So each type of bet, whether it be win, place, or show, has their own pool. And then your exotics have their own pool as well, whether it be a pick 3 through 5. And then sometimes they have a rollover if that's not hit the day before. And then once that rollover pool starts to kind of get big enough at some of these larger tracks, you'll see some of these syndicates come in and pretty much try to run everyone else out of town in terms of grab the majority of that pot, because it has started to flip from a negative EV to a positive EV. So that's something else you have to be kind of aware of, in terms of they have the money up front to kind of go all for the next 5 races, where most people like myself don't have that type of money. You're going to kind of do a 8-horse field across 5 races, which is really going to rack up. So you're looking to try to single a race, with maybe the favorite or another horse you like, and then kind of adding 2 or 3 from there to kind of keep that ticket cost down. So it's a whole kind of different mindset when you enter those pick 3s, pick 4s, of trying to increase your chances of winning by having multiple horses in each race, but also trying to understand the ticket cost and keeping that down, because if it does lose, which is the likely of chances, that is a significant kind of portion of your bankroll, because it does, that ticket does cost more.
Sure. And now, so when it comes to fixed odds, right, like the sports book is making it, is that, that has nothing to do with the pool, right? Like it's, the sports book is making a decision to put fixed odds on there that work just like any other bet, right? Like, and that doesn't change, hence the name fixed.
Yeah, exactly. I think NYRA, especially for the New York tracks, that pool is definitely separately than you're going to see on like a Triple Crown race, fixed odds before the race even starts. So that's a completely separate, different pool. And again, too, that's sometimes of trying to find value, whether it be a long shot heading into it. I know Circa also opens up several different pools each year for heading into the Kentucky Derby. So that's another way that players can kind of try to get better odds on a horse come race day at the Derby. Mm-hmm. But again, you're following all those prep races from when they were 2-year-olds into 3-year-olds. So it's a little bit more work, but I guess if you're kind of, if this is your bread and butter, it does pay off, because you are going to get better odds on pretty much every horse.
Yeah. So is there any, you know, coming from, I mean, although I clearly bet a lot of other sports, you know, the NFL is kind of like where my foundation is, you know, and I know how much the market, like it's all about the market, right? You're betting against some of the smartest people in the world, or not against necessarily, but the market is influenced by, you know, some of the most winningest sports bettors in the world, the smartest in the world in the NFL marketplace. So I'm always thinking about, you know, overreactions or underreactions in the market. So are you ever like trying to forecast where the odds are going to go, you know, before post time, or do you not even get involved in that part of it?
Yeah, you can kind of, as soon as, so after a race ends, the odds obviously open for the next one, and you can start to see slowly in terms of where the public money is going to start to come in, whether it be, and this is kind of cheesy too, but the public money, certain times it comes in a horse just because it's his name. It's that simple. There's a lot of overanalyzing you do is why the public's on this horse. It could just be it has a great name. So there's several different factors of that as well. And going back to kind of these larger groups, of they normally place their bets kind of right before post time. So it is a little bit tougher to kind of see where that sharp money is coming in on. And the odds are ever changing. So in terms of forecasting who you think might be the favorite come post time, you can kind of get a general grasp on terms of, hey, maybe he had a bad start his last race, but before that he was good. He changed jockeys now. They put blinkers on him. So he's going to kind of be a little bit more focused, and this jockey who's ridden him before has gotten a better trip out of him. So you're like, okay, he's not the morning line favorite, but if kind of people see what I see here, he's probably going to shift down in terms of odds. So there is a little bit of forecasting you can do, but again, most of it's pretty tough just because there's 8 to 10 other horses in this field where those also have ever-changing odds as well, which is going to affect your horse.
Yeah.
Even though people may not be on it, another horse may get bet down or laid off and that's going to change your odds.
For sure, for sure. Is that, Patrick, I couldn't help but notice, is that a freestyle mobile microphone you have? You're going to...
Yeah, I got a little mobile microphone too. I have to get a new one. My tripod, actually, it's not that great right now. It's broken, so I'm kind of just freestyling with it today. If that's okay.
I'm thinking about getting like one of those little tiny mics that you see. Did you see that tiny little like ESPN one they had the other day?
Right.
Everybody was like this. Oh yeah, that's right. You just clip it down, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I love this Shure mic I have sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like as far as the quality of it goes. But this damn thing, if you just move it a notch, it like falls out of the USB port. Like I need something that just stays on. My question is, this is off topic, obviously, but on these like reality shows and stuff, how do they put a microphone in their bra and their shirt? And there's never any there's never any interference. You could just hear it. Like I guess you just need to spend thousands of dollars on a mic.
It's kind of underrepresentation in the podcasting industry. It seems like I mean, reality TV gets their own TV crews and audio support, and we're just left kind of fending for ourselves. So,
you have tried to help produce this podcast, Patrick, and you can see the effect you've had so far. Zero, because of the amount of time that I have in my life. But you sent me some great stuff, and I'm going to use that. Yep. I'm going to use that eventually, but. Great overview just of how to get started. And just one more question about horse racing, and then we'll move on to golf. So, I mean, it really is about the horses, right? I mean, you probably know a lot of these horses because they're racing over and over again, right? Like after some time, right, you're just kind of tracking them and you know their background. But are there any places that you would suggest where we could go to look that are just, you know, better than most as far as the resources go? You know, you spoke about the legends before the race, but are there like sites or, you know, authors or Twitter accounts that you would trust more than others?
Yeah. So in terms of kind of researching just horses based on this, it's called Equibase. You can type in the horse's name and it'll kind of give you all the past races. You can look at the PDFs, and then sometimes it'll even link the YouTube to that particular race. You can watch it as well.
Yeah.
DRF, Daily Racing Form, is another great website as well. So those are kind of the two websites I use. America's Best Racing is another one that writes pretty solid articles. So those are the three that I kind of really look at in terms of pre-race betting. Obviously, I get my past performances, my program from DRF. So when you do that, sometimes they include a little analysis on the horses they like. So you may miss things when you're looking at doing your own research, and it's pretty helpful. So while you don't necessarily need to follow all their bets, they do make some great points in terms of whether it be a pedigree that you had missed or kind of an aspect of a race before where this horse was maybe sent three wide and got a bad trip. So there's several different websites, but I really like DRF because it does kind of include that little analysis on the top when you buy the programs.
Oh yeah. I mean, I love it that they take a position, right? Cause then you can, I mean, you don't have to take their position, but you can either agree or disagree, which is always just a nice starting point, right? Especially if you don't really know which direction to go. So that's also, I got Equibase, DRF, and America's Best Racing out there for everybody. Just to repeat, because on so many podcasts, you hear things mentioned one time and then you have to rewind and try to find it again. So DRF, Equibase, and America's Best Racing. Let's move on to golf, Patrick, because you do a lot of golf. You do it very often. You're very comprehensive at the Odds Breakers, and check Patrick out at theoddsbreakers.com for those articles on a regular basis. I don't know how you want to approach this, but just talk about what are some of your approaches to golf. Like, how do you bet it maybe differently than other people? Because I know everybody wants to take the outright winner, right?
Yeah.
But there are other bets, other derivative wagers, if you will, to look at, maybe more uncommon, and then also some more resources where people could, you know, maybe find or get started, right? Because, you know, I got to admit, Patrick, part of this is somewhat selfish. As I get my ass continually kicked in tennis, like I love betting tennis.
Yeah.
And I love betting women's tennis in particular because the matches aren't 4 hours long. Let's face it, a lot of them are gorgeous. So it's not a bad watch, and you do get a lot of variance. So you can take advantage of, like, you know, how lethargic they might be leading into a tournament. But 2 years in a row, I'm just doing okay. So maybe it's time that I look into a different summer sport as a horse racing or a golf. We'll see what happens. But anyway, golf, over to you, Patrick. Where should we get started with that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we have a massive tournament this week. We have the Open Championship in Scotland. So I'll have my article out later today, if not tomorrow morning. So be sure to stay tuned for that last major championship of the year. Golf betting is another weird one where there's several sites in terms of your databases where you can go to. There's Fantasy National, the one I use. There's Rick Run Good has another website as well. And then the Bet Spurts started their own database recently. So there's three different kind of main models, sites, databases, whatever you want, resources that you kind of look up these strokes gain numbers, their recent performances, and kind of learn a little bit more about the course. So that's where I would start. There's also several great writers out there. Ben Coley at Sporting Life, Andy Lack over at the Odds Checkers, and John Hasselbauer over at The Line. So those are three other articles that I kind of check out each week in terms of who's on who, just to get a general grasp in terms of, hey, maybe I missed a guy, or maybe they don't like one of my picks for this reason. So, and obviously that doesn't sway me either way 100% of the time, but it is nice to just see some varying opinions within this industry, because most fields are 144, 156 guys. It's near impossible to go through all those guys, especially kind of the bottom of the barrel. So when you're looking at the board, it's a nice place to start and kind of say, oh, well, this guy at 125-1, maybe I should pay a little bit more attention to him this week because he is live in this event. Golf betting, I mean, it's kind of tough too, because you're right. Everyone wants to hit that outright winner. That's where the largest odds are. That's the flashy pick of, oh, I picked this guy to win. But that's not sustainable. Having a good average in terms of if you're playing your bankroll right, hitting an outright maybe one to every eight events, depending on how you structure your card, is going to turn a profit. But again, that's tough. This year, especially in golf, we had a ton of rookies win at the beginning of the year. Scottie Scheffler went on another run during the middle of the year and has continued his stretch too. And he's going off at 4-1 every week. So unless you're singling him on your card, it's really tough to turn a profit this year. It has kind of straightened out the last few weeks with Davis Thompson winning at the Rocket and Robert McIntyre winning last week, at the Genesis. So it is starting to turn around. We are getting some better price outrights. But yeah, the majority of my card is actually placements. So you're going to look at the T20 and the T40 bets. BetMGM is one of the only books that has ties paid in full, which I would highly recommend, because sometimes, especially in these larger fields, you do get those guys, your placements to finish on that T40, T20 kind of line. And if you bet these at, let's say, a DraftKings, a FanDuel, those odds are going to be sliced in half by however many guys finish in that same position. So you're not going to get the full payout that you wagered. It's kind of a little ridiculous, but BetMGM, so BetMGM's all ties paid in full. DraftKings has started to get into it for major tournaments of all ties paid in full. So just be aware of that, of when you are betting a placement, the odds aren't as great, but they do allow you to protect yourself a little bit, especially kind of on Sunday when you're sweating out those bets. So those are kind of the general advice I would get. Obviously, that their markets are coming to be is your nationality markets, your top Canadians, your top Koreans, kind of whatever you want. Smaller pool of players, and they do allow you to take advantage of some decent prices, especially when they're 4 or 5 man fields that are in that prop, because there are certain guys that just aren't playing well right now. They don't fit the style of course, especially this week, the link style golf is not for everyone by any means. You can see that with people's past performances, whether it be the Open Championship or the Genesis, or if they played a few events on the DP World Tour. So each style of golf is different each week, and you kind of have to look at each tournament as its own section. Obviously, recent form and kind of course history plays a role into that as well, but you're really treating each week like it's kind of its own event, and the same goes for horse racing. I know with NFL and NHL, you can kind of get a little bit of rollover and say, all right, great, they had a bad week last week or whatever, but there's 7 to 7 days sometimes between these events, and these guys are constantly working with swing coaches, and some weeks they just find it. So it's a little bit tough of, while they may not have the best recent form heading into event, you can't necessarily just discount a guy because of that.
I mean, this is a super naive question, but just like shows how little attention I paid to golf. Is it all year round, or is there like a golf season?
So yeah, there's a golf season. So generally, this year they reverted the calendar back to reverted the schedule back to a calendar year. Mm-hmm. So this year, I believe it'll end around August and then start back up in maybe October. There is a fall swing, like I mentioned. So we do get a few events out in Hawaii and that West Coast while the weather's nice in the beginning of the year. And then it'll slowly start to switch back to kind of your Floridas, your South Carolinas, and then that one East Coast event each year. So there is a calendar. It's a pretty grueling kind of schedule, I'd say. Yeah. And this week there's even two events too. So you have the Open Championship, then you have the Barracuda as well, which is an alternate field event of guys who you do have some sort of inclination of who they are just based on watching golf and kind of betting it through the years. But there's also a lot of guys in that event that this may be their first or second event on the PGA Tour.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a, I mean, I imagine that's a much like smaller circuit, right? So they're either choosing, or is it like they either qualify for one or the other?
Cause yeah.
Everybody would rather do the US Open, right? I mean,
The British Open. Yeah.
The British Open. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So yeah, unless they didn't qualify for the Open Championship, the British Open, whatever you want to call it, they'll play in this alternate field event while the FedEx Cup points, which is kind of their season long total event, they'll play in that just to try to get some points and money as well. So anyone who didn't qualify will kind of go play in that, or they'll just take the week off because the PGA Tour is starting to near the post the playoffs, the three event playoffs. So it all depends on the type of player, but especially those guys who are kind of battling for their PGA Tour cards right now, who are on that kind of cut line near that 125 number in terms of the FedEx Cup standings, they'll be playing in every event they possibly can heading forward.
Well, I mean, you're not afraid of a challenge, Patrick, because I would say, I mean, horse racing and golf, like the thing I like about the WNBA during the summer is there are 12 teams.
Like, yeah, that's nice.
I can get pretty, I can become an expert pretty quickly about who these teams are, like what their potential is. It's innumerable in golf, it seems. And, you know, horse racing, right? I mean, they're always breeding. They're always churning them out, the next great horse. So it just seems like that's a ton of homework all the time, Patrick. I would say, you know, just hearing you talk about it too, I would probably be more inclined for the horse racing than betting golf more often. Just because, I mean, did the LIV golf stuff like that kind of interfere with your handicapping and like how to approach it too? Because that cut right into some schedules too, right? And some guys who you know, the projected maybe in some courses didn't go there. Is that still going? Is there still LIV?
LIV's still alive and apparently thriving for what they say, whether that's true or not. But it certainly has
a lot of quality money, huh?
Yeah. A lot. So LIV did cut into the PGA Tour. Obviously that's nothing crazy to say. Yeah. But in terms of the odds boards, that's where it really hurt, because you are getting some guys that you saw maybe 2 years ago around 45, 50 to one, and now they're kind of near that top of the board at 25 to one. So you are missing a few key guys that did go to LIV, your Rahms, your Koepkas, your DeChambeaus, your Neiman's, kind of going down the list, Cam Smith. So those are guys that kind of filled out near the top of the leaderboard, which obviously allowed you to find some value further down. But those guys who are further down are now moving up. So the odds did get a little bit worse. That's why it's really fun in these major championships when everyone's in it. The odds board's a little bit better. So it is kind of, I do go a little bit heavier on these majors because you do have better odds available. All the books kind of have varying odds, which is really nice as well. So line chopping is huge in golf too, because FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, or whatever other book you use, all have different odds. So,
well, that's the part that I like.
Making sure you get the best price is huge, especially for your bankroll management going forward. Because sometimes you would have to spend an extra $50 or $100, depending on your unit, to bet a guy when you could save that if you just looked at another book.
100%. Well, I like to know that market. The market matters in every sport, but that's a little more familiar, at least, than horse racing, which is just all over the place, it seems like. All right, Patrick, well, let's move into NFL, because Patrick doesn't just do NHL golf and horse racing. He does the NFL too. I mean, who doesn't bet the NFL at least a little bit, right? But I've never talked to you about NFL stuff before, Patrick, so I would love to get your thoughts on a few things. We're going to do a little buy or sell of some NFL teams that I listed here to talk about. And then I know that you have some questions for me about NFL betting too. You know, if there's a natural segue to ask some of those questions, feel free, go right ahead.
Awesome.
But, you know, our audience, you know, you're on this podcast to talk about your stuff. So I want to hear from you about all these teams. Let's start with the Bears, Patrick, who are listed at 8.5 win total. I mean, that's getting kind of high, and it's also juiced to the over. Obviously, Caleb Williams, right? They got DeAndre Swift now. They got DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze. They got all the weapons you can ask for. Their offensive line did pretty good last year. I think there's some question marks there. Hungry defense, defensive coach. So there's a lot of hype on the Bears right now, right? They're opening up the season. Let's see, were they 4.5-point favorites at home against the Titans? Personally, I don't know how I could bet on the Bears, you know, week one, right, to count on all this coming together that quickly. But without saying anything further from my perspective, what are your thoughts on the Bears? Is this a team that you're buying or selling heading into the season?
So in terms of buying and selling, are we basically saying, do we think they're going to hit their season total over or under?
You can either talk about win totals. You know, okay. I like to talk about like ATS companions too, right? So I might not necessarily bet the over on a win total, but I might think that a team, like I actually think that my New York Giants this year, I think they could be feistier. I think they could be a good companion against the spread. But do I think the Giants are going to get to 7-8 wins? Not necessarily, right? So, you know, and any way that you want, any bets that you're looking for. But I guess, yeah, the main generic judging point is the win total.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears are an interesting team, right? Because they obviously have the first and the ninth overall pick. Caleb Williams comes in and he's projected to kind of be this next superstar, kind of like a can't-miss prospect since, what, Andrew Luck that we've seen. And he was good at USC, right? Like, very good. Like, the team around him wasn't all that fantastic. His defense was pretty poor. UFC, great to bet the overs in those games. So thank you, Caleb, for making me money there. But this division is still a gauntlet. Yeah. Am I wrong here? Like they had 7 wins last year. Certainly wasn't a fantastic team. Kind of got scrappier towards the end of the year, rattled up a few wins. But in terms of looking for that 9-win season, when you're looking at the Bears of a rookie quarterback who hasn't really played a snap in the NFL, I get everyone's high on them, but I don't know. I still have a little bit of pause, especially, I mean, what, CJ Stroud last year came in as a rookie, was fantastic. But we've seen more than not, if not 80, 90%, that rookies in their first year just kind of take a while to get settled in with their current situation. And the coaching in Chicago, I can't really say that that's been overly fantastic either, you know? So I don't know. This Bears team, certainly interesting. The Eagles maybe got a little bit better. The Giants, like you said, I think they're still going to be pretty scrappy. And Dallas, again, is still going to be kind of one of those contenders, it seems like. So 9 wins seems like a lot. Maybe they'll push that total if they sneak out a few wins, kind of how they did if Caleb Williams is able to mesh early in the season. Yeah. They do have a ton more options offensively. But we've seen this situation play out for the Bears in years past in terms of, oh, we have this new revitalized offense. We're bringing in this guy, giving more weapons, and it just doesn't really pan out. So while everyone else is pretty high on the Bears, I do have some pause with this team. Defense is decent, but I think their schedule is just absolutely brutal.
It is pretty I mean, first of all, I like what you said about rookie quarterbacks, right? I mean, look at Baker Mayfield recently, even look at Trevor Lawrence, right? Like, these guys aren't exactly, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, I would say more than Caleb Williams, was thought of as a generational talent, you know, somebody who every team in the NFL would take him at number one, no question about it. And, you know, he just got a new contract, but a lot of his statistics are comparable to Daniel Jones. And, you know, we know the way the world feels about Daniel Jones at this point, you know, for the Giants. So, yeah, and, you know, Bears, I mean, the Packers are on the up and up with Jordan Love. You know, the Lions are one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl. They're one of the favorites to win the NFC. They almost got to the Super Bowl last year. God, I really wanted them to beat the Niners. That was rough. And then, you know, you really don't know what the Vikings are going to do, right? Like, the Vikings could be really feisty this year too. Like, you know, maybe the quarterback situation figures itself out. You said Matt or their, you know, the coaching staff there for the Bears, right? Like, Matt Eberflus is a defensive guy. So, yeah, I just, like, as a handicapper and a bettor who's been doing this for a little while, like, I don't know how I could immediately, as exciting as it must be for Bears fans, right? Like, I'm sure Kiev, as much as he's trying to like downplay it.
I mean, sure, why wouldn't you be, right? Getting a new quarterback's the best part of being an NFL fan. Like, when the Bills got Josh Allen, that it was heaven. That's all you think about is moving forward of like, all right, we got our guy. And then for the next 3 years, you're just hoping and praying that he somehow comes through and he signs that second contract. So that's pretty much it.
Even just the visual, though, of the Bears being an explosive offense is, like, tough for me. We just, like, haven't seen it. So,
yeah, it's everything your brain has trained you to think. You now have to kind of revert that and be like, okay, the Bears can put up 28, 35 points this week. And you're like, I still don't know. I'm going to need to see it first.
Plus, it's not lost on me. Caleb Williams, I forget where he's from originally, but Southern California, it's sunny every day. You're going to Chicago, you're going to where, as of October, there could be cold and windy, shitty weather games. Like, this kid better be tough. I know that he's charismatic. I think he has natural leadership qualities. He's clearly an all-world talent, but to be the Bears quarterback, to play for the Bears, there has to be a toughness there, right? To play in the NFC North. So we shall see with this. You mentioned the Bills, Patrick. Let's talk about the Bills. Their win total is at 10.5, trending under. They got rid of Stephon Diggs. Still got Josh Allen, who you mentioned. He can do it all, but maybe he's doing too much. What do you think about – is this your team, by the way? You're from New York, right?
So I'm from Buffalo. Live and die. Okay. Live and die by the Bills. That's the deciding factor of happiness every week. Exactly, unfortunately. Caleb Williams could have used that transition from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten maybe a year earlier to toughen him up a little bit. It seems like maybe that would have risen his draft stock. But the Bills had a ton of offseason changes this year. It seems like Bean kind of did a hard reset on the cap, trading Diggs away. That experiment unfortunately failed. Who you want to blame, it doesn't really matter. They weren't able to make it back to the AFC Championship like they did before and eventually go on to the Super Bowl. So the dream is still alive for Bills fans of eventually getting one before we all go. But yeah, the secondary, I think, is going to be the biggest option, the biggest kind of question mark this year, because Micah Hyde has partly retired, has said he may come back only to play for the Bills. Jordan Poyer goes to the division rival, Miami Dolphins. Matt Milano was out last year for a while. He comes back. And then that second middle linebacker position has kind of been a rotating cast of characters. I think we were on our sixth middle linebacker last year when we lost in the playoffs. I mean, that defense was emancipated, like just destroyed. There was backups everywhere. I think DeMar Hamlin was maybe in even at safety, which is so, I mean, this team's defense has kind of, while they've ranked well in terms of statistics, has still kind of been unable to shut down those Joe Burrows that we saw 2 years ago in the playoffs, the Patrick Mahomes. So there's still room for this defense. They keep drafting pass rushers, keep not working out. So it's pretty frustrating for that. The offense is going to be interesting too, right? Because we brought in Kincaid last year and Knox was hurt for a little bit and kind of thought, okay, we're going to more transition to a two tight end package. We're going to kind of really allow Josh Allen to find those crossing routes on third down instead of having to put his body on the line and run for those third and seven, third and six plays. Didn't necessarily work out. Kincaid kind of got more involved in the offense, I'd say, towards the second half of last year. Knox started to mesh as well when he came back. Diggs is obviously a loss, but again, towards the end of the year, he really wasn't kind of that playmaker that he wanted to be. Keon Coleman comes in, so we'll see. Curtis Samuel, they had a few other wide receivers. So it should be an interesting year. I do think that people are discounting him a little bit this year, and this could just be a personal bias. I'm very well aware of that. But we've seen the Bills get overhyped in years past and underdeliver. The Bills, I think, are in a much better spot right now, kind of sitting in that, let's say, 5 to 6 to even 7 position in terms of Super Bowl odds favorites to kind of make a push.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I hate that Stephon Diggs is gone. I just don't know who Josh Allen is going to go to, right? Like, Keon Coleman better be good, and he better be good really quickly. I think Allen to Dalton Kincaid is probably one of the best That's their current tight end, right?
Yeah, Kincaid and
Knox is still there, right? But Kincaid is kind of the guy now. Like that combination, he's going to be looking for Kincaid constantly, I think, right? Like, especially in the end zone, he's a big target that he can throw to. And if Keon Coleman isn't you know everything from the very start, then he's going to have to rely on Kincaid, I think, a lot more too. With two other receivers who are pretty good, but they're smaller guys. They're not necessarily
Curtis Samuel and Shakir.
Yeah, you know, wide receiver 2, 3. I don't even know if they're wide receiver 2 or 3. You know, so
it's not great.
You know, and this answers one of the questions that you were going to ask me about props. Actually, I mean, I'm not a prop guy. I have some fantastic follows on Twitter. Like, check out Josh Larkey. Connor Allen is an obvious one. Evan Silva is an obvious one. Jordan Vanek. Alex Caruso is a guy that's always been a great contact on. So I really just kind of rely on those guys. Like, and I play like the, you know, DK tournaments and stuff like that. But if I'm going to have any fantasy projection leading into the season, I do think that that's the combination. Josh Allen and Dalton Kincaid, especially against defenses that don't do well against tight ends. Like, that's something I'm going to be looking for. But it's a big question mark, man. I thought the Bills had their best chance last season. And you know, so it just kind of fell apart. I mean, right from that opening game, you know, week 1, how do you not beat the Jets? You know, how do you let Aaron Rodgers go down and then you don't beat there's just so many disappointing things that happened and frustrating things that happened for them last season that I think it's just going to be hard to come back after that, but we shall see. Let me ask you just about one or two more teams since we're running short on time here. And again, folks, that's on my end. You know, things are crazy busy. So we will have Patrick Gates back in the podcast soon. And actually, a little teaser alert, we have a really fun idea podcast that's developing for this NFL season, and Patrick is a part of that. So you're going to hear plenty of his opinions in the future. Let me ask you about the Texans, Patrick, because I don't think there's any team that's getting more hype. You know, C.J. Stroud is, you know, he's out there on like that, like HBO show now. You know, he's all over the media. Yeah, Joe Mixon, Diggs is over there. You know, Nico is still there. I mean, he's a very, very good wide receiver that I think is still underrated. Their offensive line is decent enough, right? Danielle Hunter, they brought over. Danico Autry now with Will Anderson. I mean, there's a lot of big names in this team. We saw what C.J. Stroud can be. Is it too much hype too soon, or is there a lot of reason to get excited about this Houston Texan team?
I mean, what a receiving core. Diggs, Nico Collins, Tank Dell. You're like, God, that's a threat.
It's beast. But it's, you know, like, again, I think CJ kind of makes them that too, right? Because like we didn't know about Nico Collins and Tank Dell last year at all, right? And they're obviously very good, but you have a quarterback like that, you're way better.
It's also that old saying of there's only one ball.
Right.
If Diggs doesn't start getting his catches, we've seen him do it in the past, you know. So that's always kind of an interesting thing of how he meshes with those three. Because if Stroud's just looking his way and not getting Dell or Nico involved, there could be some contention there. But I am pretty high on the Texans this year. I mean, what a fun team to watch, too, despite kind of going out in the first or beating the Browns in the first round. They beat them, right? Pretty sure.
The Browns in the first round?
Yeah.
I think so.
That was Flacco, right?
The Browns don't go very far. So that sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm pretty high on them, too. And you look at their division, too. Trevor Lawrence, I know he just got that brand new contract, but there's still some question marks with him. I don't know if he's exactly kind of lived up to his hype there. Tennessee is kind of in turmoil right now. It looks like they're starting their rebuilding phase, despite Will Levis kind of being their guy in quotation marks moving forward. Indy's a decent team with Richardson, moving forward. So that's kind of another dark horse that you maybe look at. He did look pretty decent in his first few games before getting hurt. But I think Houston wins this division, and what their win total is at 9.5. I think they clear that fairly easy just through divisional play, despite how far they go in the playoffs or whatnot. But if you are getting that line at 9.5, they had 10 last year. So I think they continue to improve. So I have no doubt in Houston this year. It'll just be interesting to see kind of how that defense holds up, because we've seen a few of those games last year where they didn't look great by any means.
And they're young, right? Like there's some young guys in the secondary still. You know, Derek Stingley Jr. is a great player, but he's young. You know, he hasn't been in a lot of those big game experiences before. And I'm glad you brought up the playoffs. Actually, a shame on me for not immediately knowing that. You know, when you're catching up on last year and getting prepped for this year, there are like so many names. Like I think the other day I forgot like the most obvious coaching names in the world. I was like, I don't know. What's his name? You know, so anyway, we're still catching up. But yeah, 45-14, they beat the Browns' ass in that first round. Yep. And then remember, they went on to the second round and the Ravens beat their ass. And of course, it was at Baltimore. But like I'm wondering, is this version of the Houston Texans, like if they saw the Ravens in the second round this year and the divisional round, is that going to be like entirely different result because of now the more talent surrounding, more experience going back into the playoffs again, assuming that they make it? So it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of in both camps. I agree with you. I like the potential of the Tech. Like how can you not see buy signs on this team?
Regular season 9.5, I'm fine with, but in terms of betting them to win the Super Bowl, I wouldn't touch it.
And as far as game by game, right? Like they're going to be, I mean, if we look at them in week one, let's say they're, you know, I mean, it's actually a very sneaky line because the Colts are only 1.5 underdogs at home against Texans in week one. But I think that's actually very sharp. But I think throughout the season, like if you see the Texans, you know, start to string together a few games with all the hype added onto it, bring it that they brought into the season, I just think you can get some pretty valuable lines on the other side of Houston. Because now, you know, it's just like any other team, right? Like just like the Cowboys, once they started to do good again with Dak, now you have a bullseye on your back, right? And teams are going to want to beat you more. Teams are going to want to prove something now against CJ Stroud. They're seeing him everywhere on TV, right? Like, you know, this kid's an overnight sensation. So I think CJ can handle it, but I think it's a worthwhile conversation mid-season. You know, at certain points, it's going to be anyway to fade the Texans where maybe they're a little bit overrated in those spots. Patrick, I had so much more to get to, but I figured that we would, you know, still have some things left on the docket. Maybe we can get another podcast up before the NFL season starts. I mentioned we got a sneaky little thing coming together for an NFL podcast coming forward. So I'm looking forward to that. I got to run, but please tell the audience, Patrick, where they can find you continually and anything else. I don't know if you got a free pick or anything that you want to give out.
Yeah, of course. You can find me on Twitter at Gator Betting, on Instagram at Gator Sports Betting. All my content's through the Odds Breakers. We're going to have weekly horse racing, golf, and then once the NHL season starts back up, we'll have our podcast Expected Bets 4, and I'll have daily articles on the Odds Breakers. In terms of the Open Championship this week, I do have one play that I really like. Oh, Cam Young, top 20, +200. That's probably one of my favorite bets this week. I have it written up already. So there's your pick. If you're looking for outrights, I have 7 right now, all set to go. So stay tuned for that article as well on the oddsbreakers.com.
Ooh, I like it. A little tease. If you want those bets, you got to go over to the Oddsbreakers and check them out. Patrick Gates. Again, I'm going to say it here, quotable from Farley Betts. I think the most comprehensive sports bettor in the industry right now, and the sports that he bets. Thank you so much for being on this podcast, Patrick. And we will talk to you again soon. You know that NFL season around the corner, my man.
All right, Chris. Thanks for having me.